Okay, I believe recording has started. Yes, okay, welcome everybody. This is the first meeting of 2020 of the Aries Working Group, the B-Call, U.S. Afternoons. Welcome to all. This is, as you see, this is the meeting page. There is a place for people to sign in. So if you could jump to that, that would be great. I posted a link in the group chat, which I think I have to post again for those who have arrived later. So there it is again, where you can add your name as necessary to this. And I see what's happening is I'm not in the edit mode, so I'll update that. Okay, I'm in edit mode now, so we should see the updates as people make them. There we go. We have some people joining. Highlight the code of conduct. We do talk about that. I do encourage you to take a look at that page from time to time. And definitely, if you haven't read it, take particular attention to this section and make sure that we're all following the code of conduct and creating a positive work environment. Back to here. Antitrust policy. We always have to follow the antitrust policy as well, since we're joining from many organizations around the world. Welcome to all. As I said, this call is being recorded. We'll start with introductions of anyone who would like to be introduced, would like to introduce themselves. This is not required, but if anyone does want to introduce themselves, please do at this time. I see a few names that I don't recognize.
Yeah, say hi, this is Ed Eichel. I'm with iRespond. We're a biometric service provider.
Yeah. Based in Seattle, or are you remote?
I'm in the Seattle area, and iRespond's also a sovereign steward.
Yes. Cool. Welcome, Ed. Anyone else like to say hi? Akif, I'm going to highlight your work. Do you want to say who you are?
Yeah, hi, sorry. My name is Akif. I actually just contributed 3 demo web controllers to the Aries Cloud Agent Python implementation. So we'll probably be talking about that in a bit.
Yeah, welcome. Akif is from the Vancouver area. And was at a University of British Columbia event that got him involved in this. All right.
Hey, I want to say anyone welcome else? Also, so that he hears more than just your voice saying it. We're glad you're here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. That's what I want. So announcements, just a couple of things. One is that the a reminder that the Hyperledger calendar of public meetings has changed. Somebody had missed that change. So under groups here is the calendar. You can click on that to go to the calendar and see all the events. They had an old calendar, which has been decommissioned or is in the process of being decommissioned, and there's a new calendar that is being used. So should make sure any links you have are using the new calendar, and there's where you'll see all the events. Second thing is, that's not really going away. So there we go. This is kind of an announcement, and I'm kind of using my host role to move something forward for myself. So I hope you don't mind, but there's an Aries 6 JIRA to request that we move the BC Gov's credential registry contribution that was previously called Indie Catalyst. We move that to Aries. Indie Catalyst is the basis of the org book, which a number of people have heard of. We'd like to move it to Aries and call it Aries Verifiable Credential Registry, or Aries VCR. We're not sure if it's beta or VHS, but it's a VCR. the reason I put community confirmation is just wondered if anyone had objections to us moving that to Aries versus keeping it at Indy. And if anyone has any comments on that.
Catalyst is such a good name. How about Aries Catalyst?
Well, we could talk to John about that. And we could move that. I will take that as a suggestion, but you're not objecting to the move from Indy to Aries?
No objection. I highly recommend it. Highly endorse it.
Okay. I'll leave it 15 more seconds for anyone else to say they object, and then I'll move on to more topics.
I think Catalyst does a really good job at Aries Verifiable Credential Registry does do a good job at labeling it, but Aries Catalyst tells people why they would want it. It's a good name.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. All right. We'll move on. Related meetings review. We often talk about these at the beginning of meetings to talk about things that are closely related to Aries. As far as I know, the only meeting that's likely to have occurred since our last call was yesterday's semantics meeting. So, Paul, do you have a summary of that?
Sure. Yeah. So the main topic that took up most of the discussion was to do with how to deal with big data loads within a sovereign verifiable credential. So there's a limit with a verifiable credential, both in storage and number of attributes, and we've managed to have a work around that solution. So it's working with hash links to basically point to a payload, and that can be wherever you want, in a wallet storage or in a semantic container. People were very enthusiastic about it. I think it's going to turn into an RFC, and I think it solves a huge problem with the sovereign credentials. So, yeah, very exciting. We'll start putting together an RFC, and we'll push it out to the community.
One of the interesting things is that medical has two problems with it. One is the sheer overwhelming number of attributes that might be associated with a medical type record. The second is that some of the records refer to things such as MRI images, which are huge and would not conveniently fit nor be transportable very easily inside of a credential. And so by referring to the object inside of the credential in a way that is immutable, then you can have the same level of cryptographic assurance. You can't do things like zero knowledge proofs on the elements of a large data object, but you can now securely refer to them and have them be part of a credential. So I think it's promising. I think it needs broader review than the semantics group can give it. And I think Aries might be the right place to bring that up because it's potentially applicable to many other use cases.
Yeah.
Could benefit from that.
I'm guessing there's some way of protecting the data so that you have some sort of, you know, you prevent others from seeing it. Because, I mean, the hash link idea is you're putting the data at a URL, you're hashing as part of the URL the content of the data, but you also want to protect that data so people can't get to it. And that might be part of that.
We're looking at a complementary technology called a semantic container, which does exactly that. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Very interested in that. So that's cool. I think I have this right as far as the rest of the calls. I don't think any of them have happened since our last Aries call. So unless someone objects, I'll keep moving. This is the time we talk about upcoming releases and work updates. This is, again, we'll leave this as to people to call out on these. Richard, anything on Aries shared to share?
No, my one update is that we did have an Indy SDK release with libvcx that includes support for additional Aries protocols. And we actually think that's the we'll do bug fixing, of course. But we think that's the bulk of new libvcx work we'll be doing in the near term. So now our plan for January is to start looking at the Aries shared libraries.
Okay. From a BCGov perspective, Andrew in particular has been working on sort of isolating out the ledger interface from the Indy SDK and getting that working in Rust and so on and so forth. So that's been interesting. So again, as you guys move forward in that, you might want to check in with him and see where he's at.
Will do.
Good. Aries Cloud Agent Python, Alice gets a GUI. As Akif mentioned, he decided to spend some time over the holidays to submit three demo web controllers using three different tech stacks and submitted a PR to Akapai. So that was very cool. Yeah, we're going to be looking. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say I'm definitely looking for a lot of feedback. So if anybody has the time to go through the code, please do. There's basically three different code bases for the three different controllers. So I'd love to get some feedback on that.
Yeah. Express.js, Angular, and .NET controllers. Very cool. As well, watch for an announcement in the next day or two on the Python Akapai user group. We're starting that soon. We've realized what Troy and the team is doing with Aries Framework Go. We want to have that same sort of community built up around Akapai. So we're starting page, and we'll have regular meetings on Akapai itself to talk about how to evolve it and what how people are using it and what priorities are. So that's the Akapai news. Troy?
Hey, everybody. There's no real updates since the holiday break. So this is just the previous message that I had in the last meeting.
Cool. This is exciting stuff. Particularly exciting. All of it is, but the WASM stuff's cool.
Yeah, we like the WASM stuff too, yeah.
Yeah. Frameworks, Jack?
Yeah, no updates, but we'll be doing a commit soon on the next tranche of progress there.
Excellent. Tomislav, I know you've been working hard on things, anything in framework.net?
Nothing specific, past certain bugs. No other major updates for the .NET
framework. Okay. Excellent. And other things here, static agent, test suite was at the top and I missed that. Daniel Bloom, I don't know if you're on, but anything to report on those? Okay. Anything from others here, Ken and Brent, anything on rich schemas that you want to talk about?
Working on the next RFCs.
Excellent. Good. Encoding and was a popular topic I noticed on Rocket Chat this week. I had several people asking more or less the same questions about it. So, hot topic. Anything to talk about on URSA, or will that wait till the meeting next week? I gather that URSA and there's a big crypto conference, I think, this week because they're canceling meetings because everyone's at a conference. All right. Okay, there's the agenda. I've, again, taken the liberty of putting a few things in. The plan this week was Philip was going to talk about the JSON protocol, but unfortunately he's got the flu or just recovering from the flu. So we agreed to push that to next week. So I added a topic or two to it to add more things to the mix. So hopefully that will work for people, but we're going to start with the issue game, as we often do. The issue game is where we try to close open issues that we hope have moved along but are still open. And so that's what I'm trying to do. So hopefully people can see that. Can we close this? There is a link to the presentation in, but I'll go to that and we'll talk about a few of these. Question 352, does Aries require a blockchain? I think we can close this one fairly easily. It was a discussion about, does Aries strictly need a blockchain? Well, if it's only used for point-to-point communication, no, it doesn't. If it does need globally resolvable bids and verifiable credentials, it needs blockchain in as much as the bids and verifiable credentials underlying or that are being used would need a blockchain. There is some discussion of not using, you know, doing bids without blockchain, but I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to that. So basically, if you want to use DIDs and verifiable credentials, probably you need a blockchain. It turned out there was further context, was a question around payment, and if that was why blockchain was being used in Ares, and that was a definite no, that's not why it's being used. It's being used to support the attributes and capabilities of DIDs and their use in verifiable credentials. So given all that, I recommend that we close this one. Any objections?
Stephen,
any comments, questions?
Yeah, just one question on that. You can probably close it anyway. It's just a question for you, really. So we're working with Kantar regarding their next consent receipt specification, and they're asking if they were to kind of get involved with Ares, does that kind of limit the use of that credential in their environment? My suggestion is that we should be able to go interoperable.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we have not achieved cross-ledger interoperability to any great degree, but that is definitely the goal. I think the Go framework folks are getting the closest to that. Others are more or less moving what was on Indy before and going with that. But the whole idea of the whole design and the implementation of Ares SDK is to enable that inter-ledger, inter-verifiable credential operation capability.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So close. Any objections to closing? All right. This is a clarification, and I put a note on this one as I looked at it. So there's basically it says there's a reference in the 160 connections RFC to change SIG, but there's no reference in the JSON to that field. How did that get there? I also noticed when I was looking over this one, no one's responded to this one yet, and it seems an obvious one that somebody should. And I also noticed in the JSON that there's nothing about in a connection response about the service section that DID peer would use. I'm pretty sure we're using that. That's how the service endpoint and the mediator requirements are conveyed. So I'm wondering, I put a note on this, but I'm wondering if either the Akapai developers, the StreetCred developers, or VCX could review and clarify that RFC in the response area and maybe take a look at that. Tomislav, I don't know if you've looked at it in a while. I've asked Andrew to take a look at it, but anyway, if any of you could volunteer for that, this is definitely not ready to be closed, but I really would like to move it forward. And in particular, move it forward in light of Ares interop profile to make sure that this RFC is accurate. I'm not sure it is.
In regards to the service section part, are you referring to the service decorator?
No. Okay. When you're establishing a connection, the request contains the service, basically the DID doc information necessary for one party to the other, and the response sends it the other way. And I'm pretty sure that has to be included in the JSON. So it's not necessarily the service decorator, although it's pretty much the same information.
Okay. Yeah, if it's not the service decorator, then it definitely needs to be documented. And if it is the service decorator, it definitely still needs to be documented because that felt light last time I looked at it.
Does anyone want to volunteer to take this one?
Yes, Stuart, I can take a look at this.
Awesome. Thank you, Tomislav. I would expect, because the DID exchange is a relatively light slightly modified copy of connections response. I'm expecting that might be the same. So heads up for those doing data exchange, they might have the same issues, but I don't know. So this is 362, Thomas Hoff, thank you. 329 was when to send an ACK after receiving a credential. So this is the issue credential. At the end of issue credential, there's an ACK sent. And the question was originally, when do you send the ACK after you've received it? And it highlighted a couple of places you could do it. And the basic answer is it's up to the implementation when they send it. But with the understanding that it signals to the other side, hey, I've got everything I need, I'm all good. So the likely place you would send it, and this is what came out in the answer, is after successfully processing the credential, whatever that means in your implementation. In theory, it could be sent when the credential is received, but if you haven't inspected it and tried to process it, and you send an ACK, you've sort of already told the other party, hey, we're all good. So you can't really go back at that point and expect the other side to be able to do anything to help you if you haven't got it. So whatever processing means is the right answer. Any comments? Have I summarized that accurately, do you think?
I would just comment, I agree with that summary. The fuzziness around what processing means is intentional because different exactly. parties could have very different ideas about what it means to process. And you can't, as the sender of a message, demand that the party on the other side of the message think about things the same way you do.
Other questions came up about the semantics of the please ACK decorator. Those got moved to RFC 0317, so I don't think in this issue we need to worry about those. I am intrigued. I just talk about this because I read through it and realized that there is no ACK, as far as I know, in the implementations of 0037, which is the proof request proof present proof RFC, but clearly in the diagram, it's actually more so in the diagram that it says, oh yeah, there'll be an accent. So I'm kind of intrigued with that we never got to that. Whoops. But that's a separate issue. So I just wanted to highlight it here. Recommendation for this one is that we close the original issue as resolved. We might get a volunteer who can look at, I wish that thing would quit showing up, get a volunteer to add any clarifications that don't change the implementations. And somebody might want to evolve the protocol to add new methods for things like ACK or the use of the please ACK decorator. But those would be a new version of the messages. My vote is we close the original issue, and so I'm looking for any objections to that. Other than that, people might want to think about looking at 37 as to whether it needs an ACK on it. I hear no objections. We will close this one as well. And as always, we close them with a note saying, you know, if it's not resolved, we can do it. 343 was a request for some requirements for a DIDCOM transport. What does it take to be sufficient as a DIDCOM transport? Are SMS messages sufficient? What's the minimum length that a message ought to be a reasonable DIDCOM transport? The context of the question was using DNS as a DIDCOM transport protocol. Could that be done? There is no, it's definitely not closed because no one has answered it. And I was looking for a volunteer that might want to take this one on. I have suggestions of who might be a volunteer.
I'm interested in this one. I see that you put my name in there somewhere. I'd be willing to do a small amount of work on this. If it turns into a giant project, I probably can't do a lot, but I could spend an hour writing up some preliminary thoughts and propose them.
I think that would be plenty, and possibly, you know, adding, I think you're looking at just adding a paragraph to the DIDCOM transport that says these are the characteristics that would be deemed minimal.
Okay.
I think that's all we're looking for.
Kyle, I'm hearing too. Go ahead, Kyle.
I was going to say, I've got some thoughts on that, so I'll work in tandem with you to help out with it. But
Kyle, why don't you just take it?
I will take a look at that, and then I will write a PR and send it out if it's only supposed to be a paragraph.
Yeah. It really doesn't have to be a lot, because I think, you know, there's not going to be that many transports, but I think it is a reasonable piece of information to add to the RFC. Cool. All right, I'll mark that. This is more a request. Can we merge PR21 into the ARIES test suite? And this was PR21 as a pluggable back channel to the test suite. I believe Evernim provided the PR. We talked a bunch on the Connectathon about this. The consensus was generally that pluggable back channels are good. We don't have clarity. We have two test approaches being pursued in the community. We don't have clarity that a common back channel would work between them. They might. It could well, but we wanted to go further in the use of back channels in both and look at how they evolve independently and then see if they can be combined. But my recommendation would be to A, merge the PR, but also whoever, you know, I think it was Daniel Bloom looking at this and request that they look to see if there's any updates needed to the ARIES test interrupt suite RFC to include that, because I know it wasn't, it didn't align with that RFC. So we can merge the PR to practically move forward, because I think that's consensus. I think that RFC ought to be updated. Comments?
I was one of the vocal commenters before. I didn't like the fact that there was a divergence between the RFC that purported to describe the requirements and a test suite code base that deviated from those requirements without trying to justify it. So I do think that we're kind of incurring a tech debt until we update the RFC. I'm not one of the people that's part of the consensus that pluggable back channels are a good idea. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But I feel uncomfortable about it, but I don't want to prevent progress. Maybe we should just move ahead.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is we move ahead, but we at least highlight, and I can take on this to at least put a caveat in to this to say, we are currently experimenting with including this, and we'll update this as those experiments proceed. But in the meantime, as I say, we merge the PR and see what happens.
That seems reasonable. I want our community to be the kind of place where when we come to a point where we're not sure what to do, we default to taking an action and seeing what happens instead of defaulting to being paralyzed. So yeah, that's good.
Okay. And I'll take on that one. We are at the end of our time for 15 minutes. I'm going to look at the other two. Yeah, I'm going to leave these off, those ones off, because we are out of time on this one. So I'm going to stop there. Now, I slammed another issue in here that this came up multiple times this week, so I wanted to get the community's view of this one. There's a line, and I've heard it several times, that people should be using building stuff with the Indie SDK because the ARIES is too immature. And so I had three or four Rocket Chat conversations that I saw that said that. And I realized that is coming from this line right here. I think this line needs to be removed. I think anyone who, and this does say, if you are using the Indie SDK to build, and people, and what, how people are interpreting this is, I'm new to Indie and Aries, and this is saying to use the Indie SDK, especially because Indie is at 1.0 release, and Aries is immature and not available to build on, so I don't want to build on it. And I think that would be really, I think that's really bad advice for anyone new to the community. And so I just wanted to check with people to say, yeah, we ought to change this.
Steve, I'll volunteer to submit a pull request to add nuance to that. I'm concerned about taking out completely, but it should, but I agree with the sentiment. It should probably say something like, you know, certain Aries agents are mature today, but Aries is still maturing quickly. You know, I'll put some sentences again, pull pull requests to try and address that.
But and I, as I say, the big thing would be, if you're new, don't even think of starting and building around the Indie SDK raw, building your own work around the Indie SDK. I think that would probably be bad advice. I mean, they could, but they better know what they're doing. Would you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually, we've had other conversations with people where they say they don't want to use Aries stuff because it's not gone past like the initial proposal stage. And we've kind of said, yeah, but actually, you know, it will move forward. So kind of you know, use that as a starting place rather than waiting for it to become, you know, fully embedded.
I think there's an important little nuance that has to be exposed by this updated verbiage that has to do less with maturity and more to do with what level we think people should build at. The reason to use Aries that I think is very rational today is that you're building, and the thing you're trying to build wants to assume that there's a framework or an agent that you're already building atop of, or you're just trying to modify or tweak it. If you're building something that's really low level, Aries is not going to help you very much today, because all of the mature stuff in Aries is higher level. So somehow we need to, it's partly a maturity issue and it's partly a level issue. And this is why, when I agree with Steven, if people are showing up brand new and they're trying to solve a problem, there's a 96% chance that the problem they're trying to solve is a high level problem, in which case it makes more sense to build on top of a, you know, an agent or a framework that makes agent building easy.
Yeah, I'll commit to submitting a pull request with some verbiage we can debate.
Excellent.
So let me just interject this comment. For new people getting started on Aries, they'll typically look for some sort of SDK. And right now I'm looking at the Aries SDK for iOS, and it has a license and a security.md file and no code whatsoever. And so in that sense, the iOS SDK is fairly immature since it's not really there yet. So,
yeah, and that's exactly the nuance that I think we need to provide is, just saying aloud, I'll type it up. It's probably something like, if you're starting from scratch, you probably want to evaluate one of the Aries agents to see if it meets your needs, or build off of one of the established Aries frameworks. But if your goal is to, if those don't meet your needs, or if your goal is to move to production in a very short period of time, then you probably want the more mature code bases in Indie. Understand this is moving quickly and you want to check back soon and figure out your migration plan because Aries is the future. Something like that.
Yeah, and maybe even put a deep link in there to the Rocket chat, so that say, you know, ask the question in Rocket chat so that they can, you can point them to the right people, right?
Yeah,
that's a good idea. Yeah, I like that. Excellent. Okay. And that took the 5 minutes that I planned. Excellent. Richard, Daniel, over to you to talk about Aries interop profile and non-interactive profile protocols and service decorators.
Excellent. I'm finding the right tabs on my screen and I'll share. So I want to start off by talking about where I am highly aligned with the work we've been doing with Aries interop profile version one. I'm excited for us to have a broadly accepted definition of what Aries interoperability means and something we can build around and use for a significant period in the future. And as we as a team at Evernym looked into the specifics of Aries interop profile version one, we had a couple concerns we wanted to bring to the group. Bringing up my screen share. And both these concerns really revolve around we think the items are appropriate and useful, but we don't think the ideas are mature enough to be included in an interop profile that we use as a litmus test for compatibility. The other part where we're really well aligned is to recognize that all of the protocols being discussed is part of the interop profile version one, I think are good protocols. They're going to be useful in the ecosystem. And not including them in an interop profile does not prevent anyone from implementing them. I hope they are widely implemented. But my vision for Aries interop profile version one is that it defines credential exchange in a way that we can put into all sorts of applications in the industry and show practical interoperability. And some of these other protocols are more for developer use cases or for other specific use cases that aren't as widely adopted and that I'm nervous about saying everybody has to implement this before we've thought through all the details. So that's the context. Now the two specific examples, I opened an issue in Aries RFC. I should make sure everybody's familiar with the Aries interop profile version one, is that correct? So this is the RFC 302 that Stephen opened. I just opened the same link twice, but it goes through and lists a number of a short list of RFCs that we think are really important for credential exchange. And we talked about this when we were all in Utah together. So here's a list just to remind everybody. And there's a set of these where users are not, where it's a non-interactive response. And so these specific examples, go ahead.
If I could just 1 second, that list is old. There's a PR pending that hasn't been merged yet, but that significantly updates this list. So this list is much larger than it is supposed to be. So the feedback from the Connectathon has not yet been merged.
Correct. Thank you for the clarification, Stephen. Okay. Yes, and so there's three of these, and it's actually looking at the shorter list Stephen mentioned. I'll bring up that pull request in a moment. There's three of these that are really non-interactive. The trust ping, feature discovery, and problem report, where we're expecting the agent to return information on the user's behalf. And we have some concerns about how that can be used maliciously, especially in the mobile use case. Evernym's key product we have is mobile client, and non-technical users would struggle to understand these concepts and make wise decisions. And we need to think through carefully how we empower the user and also prevent the worst abuses. Now, that said, we completely agree that trust ping, feature discovery, and problem report are important tools in our ecosystem and especially important in developer use cases. We're not saying these should not be, that these are bad protocols or that we shouldn't continue developing them. The question is whether we want to include them in the interop profile today. And we do need to raise a number of these concerns against, we started this, had this conversation just before we all went on holiday. So we do still need to raise issues directly against these three protocols. But the general class of issues is the same, which is I could I could force your agent to tell me information about you you might not want to reveal, such as your location, your IP address, when you're online or offline, various things in problem report. They can be fairly open-ended. And we see that as a risk. So the proposal is to remove those from the interop profile version 1 because they're not required for credential exchange. They don't impact practical interoperability today, and we can include them in a future interoperability profile when we've answered some of these questions.
So Richard, I guess a couple of things on that. This is Keith. One is, given that they are important dev tools, it seems like version 1, we should be, you know, we should want something that is helpful from a development standpoint, because you know, debugging problems is going to be something we need all the tools we need that we can have for it. The second is that I think feature discovery in particular, maybe, like, I know that we are using it to determine whether or not we can pass additional information, or we can, whether or not the other agent is capable of doing some feature so that we can do another flow to it. So I'm not sure. It seems like I guess my first point though is that the dev tools seem important. So I'm not
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
So
in version 1.
And that's a good opinion. Other people share the same opinion, and I think it's valid. They are important. However, not including them in the interop profile does not mean people aren't going to implement them. The question is, are we going to make them mandatory for every agent that claims to be compatible with the interop profile? And these specific ones, we'd have a hard time including in our mobile app today. We do include them in the developer library behind our mobile app, but we don't think they should be expected in the mobile app today, because we still need to figure out what UX would be appropriate for responding to these kind of requests.
So, first off, and simply, I can't imagine problem report being being excluded. I mean, there's so many different situations where problem can come up, even at the business level. For example, you get a proof request, and it is a valid and verified proof, but it is not acceptable from a business perspective. We're seeing that a lot, and more understanding of that. If you can't send a problem report back, I just can't imagine. So problem report to me is just like a no-brainer. I would turn your argument, the exact argument you gave, which is we can improve the protocols and issue another AIP, and we would have we would have better support that has longer term value of being, of preventing malicious users from using it. We are not locking in at 1.0 and that will stay forever. And certainly, I think the issue of malicious users exploiting the trust ping in the next 6 months is a pretty unlikely scenario. So it's a risk that I would be willing to live with for ours. And so I would rather see it included, and then the next version have these improvements that you're talking about be added to them. So I think either argument is equal on that.
Well, actually, that's where I think you and I have the biggest misalignment, is how we see these interop profiles evolving over time. I think we should be very conservative about what we include, because an interop profile, a standard like this, is going to become a benchmark by which people say, I do have some minimal compliance with the involvement in the Aries ecosystem. How hard has it been to deprecate all HTTP/1 clients or all SSH/1 clients? It's not, even though we as a community will move forward to other interop profiles, the we don't want that to include breaking everybody who hits the standard we're laying forth at this point in time.
I think we're moving way faster than that, and I don't think we have to worry about that, personally. But yeah, it's all subjective and opinion. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. Richard, you're separating these out as non-interactive ones, but I thought that it was really up to the agent itself to whether or not to make these interactive. Could you not have them? You know, anyone could have a mode in which, if you get a trust being request, that you require approval to even do a response. I think that would be a valid thing. It seems like so the security concerns of this, I think, could be alleviated with, you know, some type of a mode to say whether or not you require approval, require explicit user approval for any of these.
What's the difference between my agent not responding to a trust ping because the user rejected or me not implementing trust ping?
An implementation question, up to you.
Well, so if I don't have to respond and I don't have to implement, what's the point of having it in the profile?
Well, you were saying that the reason, okay, what I'm hearing is you were saying that the reason for not doing this was a security reason. I'm saying that's not really a reason because you can make it secure by requiring user interaction.
And interaction for responding to a trust ping or problem report is not a straightforward answer when you're dealing with mobile clients and non-technical users.
It seems to me that I want to get at what is our goal here. I feel like really the misalignment is around that. For example, one way that we could get around this problem is to say the connect.me agent that Richard has in mind when he's talking about this, the connect.me agent implements trust ping as a pinger, but not as a pingee. Okay, now we've demonstrated that we are talking the protocol, but there's no risk, nor is there any interactivity issue at all, because connect.me just ignores incoming pings. So the question is that real value and do we want that in the interop profile, or was our intention that we want all agents participating in the ecosystem who claim to be interoperable to respond to a ping as pinger, so that we can, as developers, ping any other agent we want. And as far as problem report, I agree with Stephen that problem report is a no-brainer in the cases when a protocol requires problem report. Nobody's talking about those. We're talking about cases where a problem report isn't required in a protocol, and what, we want to require agents to still send them anyway? I think really the general tenor of my comment is just we need to get a lot more specific and we need to agree on what the goal is. I suspect right now that I could construct situations where a problem report could be used and maybe should be used, but all existing implementations don't use it, even though they claim to be supporting or targeting AIP 1.0. So that tells me that our requirement here is not actually crisp enough.
And I quite suspect that there's a whole bunch of things in these, and that's part of why we're doing AIP 1.0 is to discover these things. I think there's tons of things that won't work the way we expect, and that we're going to have to clarify RFCs, revise RFCs. I mean, we already found that with the informal round. This formal round gives us a framework to discuss them, and by dropping them out, I think we actually lose that opportunity.
Okay, so you didn't really answer my question, Stephen, about what you think the goal is. What is your goal in pushing for TrustPing to be present? Do you want it to be the case that every agent who claims compatibility is pingable? Or do you just want every agent who claims compatibility to have an implementation of the TrustPing protocol in some sense, but they can refuse to talk to you when they feel like it?
I believe the way we've specified is that they would have some sort of capability around TrustPing, but not necessarily the ability to generate pings, for example, but be able to respond to them. I think that's how we talked about it. And the idea was we would allow in the implementations table a link to where you could say, well, I support it, but I don't really support it in this way. And again, that would be part of the learning we'd get from 1.0 to decide how we want to proceed on future, you know, on 1.1 and 1.2.
So you would imagine that it's a legitimate position for an interactive mobile agent to take to say, sure, we'll support TrustPing when it's outbound, when we're the pinger, but for the time being, we're not going to support it inbound. We're not going to respond to pings until we get around to producing a better UX. And that becomes an asterisk in a table, but the agent that we're talking about isn't, you know, precluded from claiming AIP conformance.
I mean, I'm fine for that for now, yes. Quite frankly, though, depending on how, you know, the reality of TrustPing right now, and I'm not sure if it's still that case, that TrustPing is used as a way to ACK a connection that gets established because there's no ACK at the end of a connection. And so I know some implementations use a TrustPing as a way to verify that the other, that the connection was actually established, because there's no other way to do it. That's a, you know, that's a problem. So that what that's going to create is we can claim RFC or AIP interop, but we're actually not able to interop. And that's what we'll discover in doing this. We'll, you know, where are the holes that come out of this? The correct answer to that is not actually to support TrustPing. The correct answer to that is probably to make sure that the connection interaction closes the loop. But as I say, these are the things we're learning.
I think there's an interesting point here that should be brought up. Tobias has brought this up to me before, which is the complexity of not responding that you introduce on the requester, and not necessarily the complexity, actually, more the ambiguity that you introduce and how they need to continue their workflow with that, I think is the underlying concern here. And the two camps that I've heard with this are, on one hand, you shouldn't be forced to respond because you want privacy capabilities. And I think there's some strong arguments for that. And then on the other camp is the, I need something simple because I need guarantees to be able to continue my response flow. And if I don't have those guarantees, I don't know what I should do, which I think also have some strong arguments. So essentially what I'm saying is I think we need to try and figure out what those guarantees are when you're requesting it and make sure that they're balanced with privacy. And then I think we'll be able to find a compromise and a resolution between the two.
I think that's well stated, Kyle. And that's why my fundamental concern isn't to not work on these RFCs. My fundamental concern is to be conservative in what we call an Aries Interop profile to include as many of the protocols as we're really confident in, rather than these ones we know going into it that there's issues. I think that's going to be the quickest way, Stephen, to get the feedback you're looking for, is to say, here's the ones we know we're confident in. Let's move forward quickly towards this goal rather than waiting until people are comfortable with the way these different RFCs are defined.
I mean, I don't agree with this. I'm happy to move forward. I have a real problem with removing problem report. So I've got two levels of concern. I would compromise on the leaving out trust ping and feature discovery, although I think we'll get problems down the line with that. I can't figure out why problem report it should not be considered supported.
So for me, it was the response back, I think, was the most important thing, and I didn't think we had defined that. I absolutely think it's necessary. I just think we also need to be careful in terms of the information we're sending back because of the ability to get reconnaissance information on it.
I know. Yep.
And actually, Stephen, that I agree completely. Problem report I included because it's susceptible to the same class of attacks. But again, it's the one that is most necessary for practical interoperability. So
exactly.
Yeah. So. Maybe that's when we say, look, *, be aware, but we move forward. The other two, I think we can have practical interoperability without them, and we can fix them over time. Hopefully not too much time.
Just quick idea, to be clear, Evernim intends to fully implement trust ping and feature discovery in its enterprise agent. The reason we're uncomfortable is almost entirely because of a consumer mobile app agent, not an enterprise one. And I think, Stephen, you're speaking from a perspective that's informed almost entirely by Evernim's or by enterprise software. And so
So the other thing to add was, if you remember, and I think it's part of the PR, I'm pretty sure, was that we would add a, what roles do you play? You know, what style of agent are you claiming interop with? And mobile is one of them. So that is part of the PR. And so when you put it in, you would put that in, and we could add general comments around, oh, well, if you're a mobile agent, then these are the caveats, and they're across all of them.
So here's an idea for this, playing along with the standard report. It's a bit of a compromise on the trust ping aspect. But what if we had like a standard error report that says, I'm responding, which is an acknowledgement that I'm here, but I'm not willing to provide any more information. So it closes down the ambiguity from the requester's side, but it also does consider the privacy concerns. And this becomes essentially like a standard response that you can send out, and it becomes a catch-all for, I don't want to share more information.
The challenge is even that can reveal whether you're online or offline and what your location is in a very rough way. So my proposal was that we amend the RFC to allow your mediator, your agent, to respond on your behalf. But again, that has its concerns too, because connections are with agents. So I don't think we have a good answer yet.
Yeah, I feel like what you're saying from the privacy perspective is we don't have a mature understanding of what we require from a privacy perspective.
Yeah, the other approach is that we do implement some kind of response profile that's configurable to the user, but that's going to take a lot of UX design and testing. So it's going to take a while, I think, before we have an answer.
I heard Stephen propose a compromise that I would be willing to accept, which is just to say that the feature discovery and trust ping protocols are not required. I would also be willing to accept another compromise, which is we say they're required, but we say it's not bad or deprecated behavior for an agent to put an asterisk and say, we didn't think this was a good thing to implement right now, and here's why. Either of those would be acceptable compromises to me.
I like that. I think we've left space in the AIP RFC for that type of thing as a general one.
I'm nervous about the asterisks because I think it erodes the whole concept of an AIP. If I would rather have an AIP that was narrowly defined and everybody implemented in detail rather than one that's broadly defined and people opt out of large sections of it.
They're not going to be able to opt out of large sections of it. I don't think we're talking that.
Well, three protocols, I don't know what counts as large. They opt out of sections of it, and you don't know which they opted out of without going to some chart.
Right, but you could have exactly what Daniel said, which is there's a the Evernim enterprise client has one line in the implementation table and the mobile agent has another. One is a server side, one is a mobile, and mobile we have a general comment about these things.
But again, go ahead.
And then if a further asterisk is needed, you can do that. But chances are mobile agents across the board will not implement what you're talking about. I mean, this is something Troy's brought up a fair amount, and it's perfectly reasonable. We wanted to go with AIP 1.0 to see how to deal with it and try to come up with a way that we can deal with it. I think this starts to get into that without getting so nuanced that it's impossible to understand the AIP.
I think another thing that would also raise my comfort level is if we put a sunset provision on the AIP. And I'm not necessarily strongly proposing we do that, but I'm just pointing out part of the other discomfort here, which I do share with Richard, is I'm afraid that AIP 1.0 will still be relevant in 3 years. If there's some way to alleviate that fear, then a lot of this would go away.
I think that fear is valid, and I don't think it's possible to remove. Looking at, for example, email, we've never been able to achieve getting PGP keys or certs in, and email's been around forever. So I think it's reasonable and realistic to expect that once 1.0 is set, you will never get rid of it. And I share
I disagree, but again, subjective. We're guessing the future.
Yeah, that's true.
And I do realize time is ticking. We do have a mutually acceptable compromise, which is to include problem report but remove trust ping and feature discovery. I think that's fine. I got to get my second factor to log into GitHub and add that comment, but I'm happy to do that as soon as the call's over. Do we need any other conversation on this topic?
Well, that sort of leaves Keith out because his feature that he wanted is there. So, Keith, you're going to have to weigh in at some point, either in the issue or online.
Yeah, apologies, Keith.
Yeah, I think with one thing that we could with feature discovery, if that were not, it's actually already in the. I had already checked that in earlier to the test suite, but you're saying even though things are in the test suite currently, they may not make it into AIP V1.
Correct. That? And that's expected, that the test suite would cover more than what is part of an AIP. It's fine for it to be in the test suite, in other words, absolutely.
And even preferable, because that provides a lot of the feedback Steven's trying to get, is we show compliance with the test suite. That's independent from whether we get to carry the AIP 1.0 badge or not.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, as long as what we're running, we're using that as the metric, it's not going to break me. As long as the, because it's already in the test suite.
Okay. All right. Any other objections to that compromise of leaving problem report in and removing the other two from AIP?
What's our goal with problem report? I have no objection to this. And again, I have no dog in the fight. I'm just wondering if I need to help contribute my opinions on problem report or what's the plan going forward in your mind?
I mean, I think there needs to be discussion around unsolicited problem reports and what should happen to them, because I think that's the concern. is. I think there's two different nuances of unsolicited ones. One is, there's sort of three types of problem reports. One is a completely unsolicited one, which is the big concern that I think Richard and Daniel are raising. The second one is, it's built into the protocol that if something goes wrong, you send a problem report, and there's a very explicit place where a problem report would come out. Again, I don't think anyone objects to that, and we all agree that that should be there. But the third is that you're in a protocol, and it's not explicitly called out in the protocol, but your agent gets to the point that it's confused and sends a problem report saying, I'm lost, I don't know what's going on. So it's not really unsolicited, but it is also not explicitly in the protocol. And I don't think people really know how to handle that, but I'm certainly anticipating that there will be for things like, you know, the case I'm hearing more and more about this, this idea of the presentation request that is cryptographically valid, but not acceptable at the business level and things like this. So I think there will be cases that come up relatively soon. And so that's why I'd like to see problem report completed.
Okay.
That could be a clarification in the problem report. RFC, I haven't looked at it in a while.
Yeah, that makes sense. So
I agree.
That RFC has some really good ideas in it, but I think it is one of the ones that it would be worth doing another round of polishing on, because it's one of the early ones, and it's served us well, but probably needs some updating and extension since we last talked about it or visited it.
Yeah. Like, I think out of the blue problem request should be ignored.
But what about if you out of the blue contact somebody and say, hey, let's speak protocol foo. Should they send you a problem report?
Yeah.
Because
no.
Get them to send you.
I think we could actually put a concept in here that we can leave it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, wait,
it gets into a rabbit hole.
That will be important to me, actually, because if we don't have this in AIP 1, and I do send a feature discovery to someone else, I'd like to know that I'm going to get an error back.
Well, all of us would love to know that we're going to get responses, but that's not the way asynchronous messaging works with any messaging system. It certainly doesn't work with email, right? You can send an email to somebody and say, hey, let's do X, and they may not respond, or they may respond and it went in your spam folder. You just can't count on responses.
Yeah.
You can guess that 96% of the time you'll get one, but you can't be 100% certain you will.
Can we include a TTL to meet that? So
that's what the expires time is on a DIDCOM message generally. If you say this message expires in this time, what it means is if you haven't processed this by this time period, then don't process it because I no longer want you to.
So I propose that we add for a discussion topic to a future meeting, discussing problem report in more detail, because this is really valuable, but we've got a couple other topics covered today.
Yeah, I mean, if I could, I just remembered one other thing that bothered me about the whole removing of these things, which is that you do have to remember that these assume a connection has come across. You already have a connection. So none of these would be coming from an unknown source, any of these messages. So although they can track you if they repeatedly sent you truck pings, you do have a connection with them. So it's not like somebody could do that without your knowledge or without a connection already established.
Well,
but anyway, that's just a side point.
As far as tribal knowledge is concerned, but it's not technically true as far as the spec, because I can construct with the specs that we have a service decorator and an ephemeral.
Yes.
Thing,
yep.
Theoretically claim that you should be able to respond to it, even though you yep. don't have a connection with me. So,
although construct an ephemeral challenge, you have to out of band get that to my agent somehow, which means you have to use a QR code or something. So again, you know, I don't think there is any way that you can out of band do that without knowledge of the person who has the account, like without knowledge of who you are, I don't think it's possible.
Well, and that's exactly one of the concerns we have is the way I interpret the RFC. If you have if you're establishing a connection, you might want to figure out what features are supported so you can know which connection protocol you're going to support. And what happens when there's an error while you're establishing a connection?
And that's exactly what Keith's talking about. You got to remember, Keith's not sending that before you have a connection. He's sending that after you have a connection.
Yeah, and actually, that was one question I had is why we didn't consider including that as an optional field in the connection request and response.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of nuances I think we need to hammer out. So I got my comment in. Any concerns with that comment? I'm sharing my screen.
Okay, and we didn't touch service decorator.
Yes, that was the next topic if I can still have time, but if we need to move on to the next topic, then we'll postpone service decorator.
I think what I'll do is I'd like to move service to next week. So we'll add you to next week. And I'm going to do a cut down version of what I wanted to talk about, if people don't mind.
I think that's fine. Just so people are aware, the pull request that Stephen created is a pull request 358.
Can you get it merged? Is there any reason we can't merge it since this is a proposed and not a accepted? Like, I don't know why we're not merging that one. I mean, I didn't want to do it myself, but I don't understand why we're not merging it.
I'm willing to merge it. I think that's reasonable.
Whether we merge it and then remove it or whether we remove it and then merge it, I guess it's all the same thing. But I am concerned about merging it with something additional that we're concerned about.
It's already there. If you look now, it's already in there. So you're anyone who comes and looks sees there's like a bunch of ones in there that we don't want to have in there because we haven't added the feedback from the Connectathon.
I will merge this while we're talking.
I think it should be merged. I thought it should have been merged quite a while ago. So, but
just to clarify, just service decorator isn't currently in the list. It's getting added as part of the pull request.
Right, but transport return route, basic message, V0.1 credential exchange, all of those are in there. Trust things in there. Discover feature. You know, that's what I mean. Not merging it isn't benefiting us, I don't think. Plus, I added a cool Python script that checks to see if we're up to date on PRs, on RFP versions.
So okay. just for people to see, there's a discussion on pull request 350, and people can follow that for the other side. And hopefully, if people review that before the next conversation, maybe we can even close it without the next meeting. So I yield the floor.
All right. We don't have a lot of time, but I thought I'd just introduce this topic and get people thinking about it just for the fun of it. I intended this one to be more of a discussion because I don't have, you know, a solid a full answer here, but I think that where we are now isn't great. Whoops, that's not what I wanted to do. So Connection Glue is the trouble with invitations. So I'm just going to go through these slides quickly. A link is posted and people can get an idea of what I want to talk about. And then we can decide if we want to talk further about it, if people have ideas about RFC changes that might be needed or new RFCs. The challenge with invitations, enabling reuse of connections when starting from an invitation. A common scenario is that you go to a website and you get a QR code to connect with that website. It establishes a connection and then they do something like they offer you a credential or they get you to prove a credential. And the problem with that is every time you go to that website, in the applications that I've seen built so far between the mobile and the service, is every time you go to that website, you wind up with a new connection because The invitation doesn't have a way to say, hey, we already have a connection. So that's the first problem. Second problem is kind of the entanglement of invitation with the connection bid exchange. And the fact that both of them have an explicit invitation message versus a separate invitation message that could be responded to by either a connection request or a bid exchange request. And so I think that might make it difficult as we transition from connections to bid exchange. And then the last is just the general, we have several places where we use out of band messages. And the thought is to try to, instead of having one-offs of out of band messages, we try to combine them into a single technique that allows for different payloads, different types of out of band messages that get embedded in those, basically as sub protocols. So those are the three ideas. The easiest one is this, how do you reuse a connection? Again, I talked most of this, you had an out of band invitation. The expectation is the invitee, the person who scanned the QR code, will send a request with their bid doc information, and the inviter will respond with a response message with its bid and bid doc information. The invitation is plain text, usually via transported via QR code, and it tells the user, hey, this is where you should send the response message to this, where you should send the request. But if there's already a connection in place, how does the invitee say, hey, I don't want to establish a new connection with you, I want to use the existing one? Proposal I've got is basically make it possible and extend at least the bid exchange, make it possible for an invitee to recognize an invitation that it already has, so that it can check to see if it already has it, and explicitly provide a message in the bid exchange, at least the bid exchange protocol, to say, hey, use this connection that we already have, so that the receiver would be able to correlate this message with the invitation so that it knows, oh, this is as if a new connection was being established, so I know how to continue on with my session with this user, but I'm going to use this existing connection. I'm not going to use a new one. I'm not sure. There could be security concerns. There could be other issues with that. But if you use an existing connection and reply, obviously you have to have the right keys to be able to do that. So I'm assuming that would you would be able to prove control as part of that message. But that's something to think about. So my suggestion is we at least change the bid exchange, which is still in the proposed state, to support the new capabilities. I think it's still in the proposed state. Otherwise, we extend it to do that. A separate issue from that is something I mentioned earlier about the use of trusting, which is currently that flow in here leaves the invitee not knowing if the inviter ever got this response message, so it never knows that the connection has actually been established. So explicitly add an ACK onto the protocol. So that would be another change I would make at the same time. It's a separate issue. Entangled, this is the fuzziest. But what we think is it might be easier to have an invitation protocol, and that a potential response of an invitation message would be either a connection or a bid exchange. And I'm thinking that might be easier to manage. And the result of that would be to take invitation out of 160 and 23 and make it a protocol on its own. And then the final sort of suggestion, and I'll leave it at this, is sort of come up with a new method of handling out of band messages. Basically, you know, we've got these messages. We currently have several one-off ways of handling out of band messages. We handle, we're doing presentation request with the service decorator. We're using invitations that contain essentially a service decorator, certainly the same information as the service decorator, to say, hey, when you respond to this invitation, respond to this using these keys and this endpoint. There are others that I've heard people talk about. There's a couple I've thought of. None as prevalent as these. We think these are big. The authorization use case is using this a lot. The attributes are here. Plain text, often presented as QR codes. Where the response is to go, and because it's out of band, because by definition there's no connection, no known connection existing. And proposal for that would be to come up with a specific out of band message with a sub protocol. It's quite possible that some of the diff JWM work may come up with a way to do that as part of the envelope, and maybe that is sufficient, but that's to be determined. But basically you have, the message parts that we know about, common items like the message type and the response description. And then you have maybe a list of expected responses or response protocols that you expect back, with possibly payloads related to this. Oh, I expect back I expect back a presentation, and the payload is, here's the presentation request. It would have QR handling in it. So you might, we've already used the concept of a URL shortener, because the URLs were too long to have a reasonable QR code. So this RFC could handle that and talk about how to do URLs and how we want to handle them in common ways. And then, of course, privacy and security concerns, when to use and not use this type of message. When is it appropriate to use it, but when is it not? What are the guidelines for using it? So that is a short introduction to this, and sort of this is something that I'm seeing a lot of, and it's becoming more and more of a concern for people. So I'd like to get feedback on it, and then my plan was to work on whatever RFC PRs or new RFCs might be needed. And so I'd be glad for some help on it. Any comments? And other than that, we can wrap up this section.
Hey, Stephen, sorry to clarify, when you mean out-of-band messages, you mean messages sent in the absence of an underlying connection? Or what?
Yes, out-of-band messages being that you don't have a connection. I think I've got that here. They're out of band since there's no known connection that exists between the two parties.
Okay.
The sender of the message does not know that they've got a connection with the user. They may have one, but they're not, because they don't know who the user is yet, they don't know which connection to use.
Yep. And just to kind of refer to some of the JWM stuff, yes, there is some kind of advancement in thinking that Daniel Harmon and I were actually discussing yesterday as well, briefly, that I think might help in future.
Cool. Okay. With that, I think we're done. We're just a couple of minutes to go. As far as future topics, we do have these. Next week, we will have Philip from SecureKey talk about RFC 351, which he's been has produced and then has modified. So he's going to talk about that, which is a generalized version of HTTP over DIDCOM, which was another RFC that he proposed, or the SecureKey team proposed. So we're going to have a session on that. We will have a session on the service decorator. And so those two things will be there. And other than that, people are welcome to either tell me which of these they want to talk about ahead of time, or if there's other topics they'd like raised and they're willing to present and lead a conversation on, let us know about those. And barring any other comments, that is our meeting for today. Anything to add by anyone?
As usual, thanks for the interesting conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, all. Take care.
Thanks for ably leading the meeting, Stephen.
You're most welcome.